Welcome back to another episode of Data Protection Gumbo. And today we are going to dive into some of the principles of the AI stack. I love that title because my guest that I will introduce you to in a moment, Pavel Duchovny, he is the lead developer advocate over at MongoDB. We're going to dive into this topic and hopefully he will provide you with some best practices and insights around MongoDB and also some of the other things that they are doing with AI within the industry. So Pavel, welcome to the Gumbo. How are you?
Yeah, thank you for having me. I'm good. How are you?
Doing well. So let's start off with a brief rundown of your experience and how you ended up at MongoDB, and then give us some information about MongoDB to start off with.
All right. So I've been a software engineer for about 20 years, which is more than 20 years now, which is a bit of scary to think about. And I've started my steps as, you know, a junior software engineer, and then I dive into the database administrator role. And within the database administrator role, I obviously work then on relational databases. So, you know, Oracle, SQL Server, Postgres, MySQL, then came the cloud era. So I was working on things like Redshift for Amazon or different Azure. I don't even remember the names of those databases. And that led my role to be a DevOps engineer. So I was a DevOps engineer for a few years at E&I, which then was acquired by Dell, but that's a whole different story. And I met two colleagues there that really liked the way we interacted, the way we worked, and they went to work for MongoDB, which was a small startup by then, like 400 people. Where I based, they had like 4 employees. So that was actually like a bit of a scary move, going out of a big enterprise to something like looking startup-ish. But I did hear that name when I was working in the database industry and when I was a DevOps engineer. So I was curious. Maybe that's a good place to explain what MongoDB is.
Sure.
So MongoDB is a NoSQL database, which stands for, you know, not only SQL, because we do support SQL. The fundamental difference is that MongoDB, where there's 3 fundamental differences. One, we store data in documents, which a lot of developers are familiar as, you know, JSON objects. Mm-hmm. So that means that we do not map as rows and columns in a relational database, but we map data as objects. And that first makes us really flexible, because your schema can be very, I would say, flexible, sparse, those different terms, right? Mm-hmm. And the second thing, we were built in the internet era. So that startup was built in the cloud era and the internet era. So we are fundamentally built to be resilient, to be scalable. The concept of like replication and horizontal scaling are baked into the product from almost day one. Mm-hmm. So those were like the aspects that were brought to MongoDB. And through the years, I joined MongoDB when it was 2016. And I feel like it was a moment where we were more of a kind of, I don't want to say a toy, but like a pretty early stage database. And it was like a very cool journey to see how MongoDB actually went from that toyish thing into
open source, right?
Yeah, it was started open source.
Okay.
Yes, we're open source. There's a different licensing thing, but I don't want to go into those politics. Definitely, you know, see all the enterprise grade features, the security features, and obviously our, I would say, flagship product, which is MongoDB Atlas, where we offer MongoDB on the 3 major cloud providers. Mm-hmm. One of the first tools that was really, really cloud agnostic, so you can spin up clusters across several clouds. It's a huge data platform for a lot of developers, and we have growing amount of customers going every day. Yeah, but that's the way I ended up in MongoDB, and now I'm a lead developer advocate, which allows me to play with a lot of stuff and build those sample projects in those new spaces like AI.
Got it. So you said it's a place where I guess developers go to not play, but they go to build, right? And what is this? I saw your blog out there and you mentioned something about the AI stack. What is an AI stack? And also, what are some of the components that make up an AI stack?
Right. So, you know, we as developers, you know, a software stack is not something that we should not be familiar with, right? A lot of the times that we come to design our software, we're talking in stacks, which means like a layered base, a definition of what technologies and what tools we're going to use within our software development. So we see that as, you know, AI applications are not that different or will not be that different from, you know, more traditional based applications. You will have but in this case, you will have an AI stack. So within that AI stack, you will have your programming language, like, right? You need to choose your programming language. You need to know, you know, what tools are available for that programming language from things like, you know, what operational database you're going to use, because an AI application will definitely probably need an operational layer where you store your metadata, you store your operational data. You will need a framework probably, or you can go directly to LLM providers, but we see a lot of new applications within the AI space use a framework, something like Llama Index or LangChain. There's things for Microsoft called Kernel AI, right? There's like different frameworks which allow you to orchestrate and build tooling around the way you talk to the LLM. Mm-hmm. And obviously, you have the LLM, which is the brain, right? It's this generic thing that knows a lot of and was like trained on a lot of public available data. But you can use that to kind of feed your app with intelligence.
Okay.
And the final thing is the vector, right? And a vector searches, I don't know if they're that new, but I think they really kind of took off with this AI era, right? Because the way vector searches work is that you have a bunch of vectors associated to your data or to each of your data that you've vectorized. And you have your query, which is also a vector. And in that space, you want to search how your vector is contextually close to other vectors.
So right? What is a vector for Gumbo listener that doesn't know what a vector is?
A vector is a bunch of number dimensions. So it's like a big array. It can go anywhere, like a few numbers to thousands. Each dimension in that array probably describes a characteristic of that vectorized data. So for example, if an AI module thinks that the first or the second element is how color related is that term, it can rank in between -1 and 1, right? So it ranks the data that you're vectorizing on a huge plate of, or like a huge dimension of different attributes. And this way we can kind of compare that to other terms within our data.
Okay. So what can you tell us, I guess, your thoughts on, and I know the whole AI stack, there's a lot of dimensions and a lot of components involved in an AI stack, and where MongoDB sits is the operational and vector database side of the house. So what are some of the best practices just around vector databases and some of the performance wise around choosing the right one? And also just making sure that you have that storage layer optimized appropriately.
Right. So with MongoDB, I think one of the advantages is that your operational layer and your vector layer are the same. Okay. So instead of creating ETLs and having two different data sources sync them, right, which will happen if you use a dedicated vector database and then a dedicated operational database. So MongoDB, you get that from the same endpoint, right? From you use the same driver, you use the same aggregation query that you will use to query your data, your operational data, and you can use that query to query your vector data. And moreover, you can have a query that starts as a vector query and it subsequently moves into a regular database query. Like I'm doing a join and then I'm reshaping the data and then I'm grouping, right? I think this makes MongoDB a compelling solution. The best practices is obviously you need to understand what the vector sizes that you want to choose. Like bigger vectors will give you more precise similarities. But on the other hand, you need to use more storage. You'll need to use more memory because those vectors, as in any other database, needs to go into your memory. We need to remember that the vector data is an array of floats. And as we know, in computers, floats are not compressible that well, as well as textual data. So that means that if we're going to store huge documents, right, and we're gonna add a vector to that document. And most of our database queries are actually not even interested in the vector. It's made for this AI process that I have on the side, right? So that means that every time I'm going to scan a document, I'm not only going to scan all my metadata fields, but I'm also going to scan this vector. Even if we're going to project that out, like if from a SQL perspective, you have the SQL star and the SQL specified columns. So in MongoDB, we have the same concept where you can project the specific fields. So projecting out the embeddings does help the driver because you're not transferring this data over the wire, but you still got to scan it on the database layer. So we need to think about the trade-off, like, are we having a collection that has a few fields and we have a pointer to a collection with a lot of fields? And then if we need a vector data, we query that data and maybe we do a lookup or we do a subsequential query. But most of our operational data is actually working without the vectors interfering. Or we need the vectors all the time because all that the application is doing is actually doing this semantic.
Okay. Data. And obviously, you know, the big conversation right now besides AI is cybersecurity and making sure that your data is safe and secure. Now, you're talking an AI stack and you're talking developing. How do you keep that data safe while you are developing on this AI stack?
Right. So I think one of the things that developers sometimes afraid of and a lot of companies are afraid of is that if you're using a public LLM within your application, OpenAI or Anthropic or any other company, you want to limit the amount of information that you expose to those LLMs. Although they have probably, those big agreements that they are, encrypting your data or keeping it safe, they're probably training on that data at some point. So I would say the first thing is you need to have a database that allows you to, the first thing is, project only the fields that you do want to pass to the LLM. If I have a credit card or my social security number in my data and the LLM doesn't need to see that, make sure that all of your queries or all of the data that you are passing to that LLM in order to do that task or have that context, make sure that you're passing only the fields that are necessary to be passed.
Okay.
Now with MongoDB, you also get the aggregation framework, which allows you to reshape the data. And sometimes we can redact some fields. So that means that we're going to do things like maybe substringing, obfuscating some things. But I think one of the most, I would say,
interesting, fascinating, okay.
Yeah, fascinating feature is our field level encryption, which allows you to encrypt specific fields within the database. If you query them with an encrypted client, right, the driver encrypted only on the application side.
Mm-hmm.
If you're using it with an unencrypted client, you can still use that data, but those fields will be encrypted. So you will see a bunch of random strings or base 64 strings in it. And then you can safely pass it to the LLM. The LLM might understand that there's like some information with the SSN field or the credit card field, but it will not be exposed. And then you don't need to even worry if your developer, projected out the fields, passed that field specifically, right? It's already encrypted. Only a specific application can see that data and other applications cannot see that data.
Okay, so field level encryption is really good Is that out of the box like that, or is that something that has to be turned on?
It's out of the box for from version 5.0 or 6.0. Now at 7.0 and 8.0 is coming up. What is really cool about this encryption is it is a non-deterministic encryption. So queryable encryption that not only your values will be encrypted, but they are randomly encrypted. So one time, a specific 1, 2, 3 will be encrypted in one value, and then the second will be encrypted in another value. So it's very, very hard to reverse engineer this protocol. And then the latest version that's going to come out until the end of the year, MongoDB 8.0, we allow range queries on those non-deterministic fields, which is one of the exciting things. So not only equality, but you can now also query by range, which is really cool. And from the AI perspective, again, it's like, you know, maybe some sensitive data needs to be encrypted just in case the AI modules will see that, or it will be exposed in some way to the client side.
So you've been at this for a while, and you have a lot of great experience, and we're talking AI. So of course, the Gumbo listeners would want to know what the future would look like as far as developing and the way that AI will be developed in the future, and some of the AI applications that individuals or developers will use. Can you tell us what your thoughts are on that?
Right. So that's a tricky question, right? Because I think if you go to the CDO or CEO of OpenAI or Anthropic, even, or all those big companies, I don't know if they have the answer. Like, it's evolving so fast. But I would say that, you know, there's some fundamentals that I think will take a while to shift. So we're talking about agentic systems right now, right? It's the buzzword. It's not only AI applications, but it's actually like an agentic system. So it's a system that can think for itself, can interact with you and get information, and maybe even evolve by itself out of your information. So I think the nice thing about agentic systems, and this is also part of the AI stack, is that you can have MongoDB as one of the tools for the agentic system. Like, for example, we have a recent project that we did, which is like an HR system. So it has a grading tool that allows you to grade employees by, you know, a specific set of rules. And you give that tool to the AI, and then, you know, the framework and the agent that you're building with that framework and the LLM together understands, when do I need to grade, for example, when do I need to grade employees for a task? When do I need to look up employee profiles, right? So how does an employee lookup looks like, right? It's eventually a database operation. Whether it's a vector query or it's a regular query, it's up for the developers to decide.
Okay.
I think agentic system and tooling is one of the futures of the AI applications. And I think the second thing is all those tools that allow you to code faster, right? If you go now, if you go to YouTube or even TikTok or any of those platforms, you see a lot of videos of developers developing so fast with the new modules and some tools, like, I don't know if you heard about Claude Dev. And I think that MongoDB, because it's so flexible, it works really well with those tools. So when I develop my application and use MongoDB, you know, those tools write code pretty well for MongoDB. Surprisingly good for me. But it's also scary because it's also my job as security, which is at stake.
All right. And Pavel, let's say there's a computer science student, someone who's a senior getting ready to graduate right now. They're young and they're hungry, and they are going to enter the job market very soon, and they want to be a lead developer advocate just like you. What advice would you give them in like 30 seconds?
I would say, like, the number one word is explore. Explore, okay. Test, fail fast, but, you know, don't be afraid of getting back up. So a lot of the times I started to develop a project and I don't even have an idea of what I'm going to do. So I jot some things, it fails. I try to keep what failed. I try to kind of use the tools around us now with, like, you know, all the AI stuff to see where were my mistakes. And you know what? Pretty fast, I'm getting back on track. So I'm thinking that somebody who just came out, don't be afraid to, you know, go to different tools, different databases, even if it's relational databases. Try them out, try to work with them, do the basic stuff, then try to do something that helps your day-to-day work. And yeah, just don't be afraid of seeing errors, you know. In Developer Advocate, like, we do workshops, online coding, there's errors all the time. Even if I know and I'm always acting like as a scripted engineer, there's always this time that an error will come. So don't be afraid of getting errors and explore.
All right. Great advice there. And I do appreciate you taking some time out to be on Data Protection Gumbo. And before I let you go, I want to let the audience know that we do have a group now with 26,000. It's on LinkedIn. It's called Backup and Recovery Professionals. And it's a large group of professionals such as you and I, and we're talking about things like cybersecurity, storage, backup, compliance, even blockchain and Bitcoin every once in a while. So please do join that group, and also check us out on YouTube. We are new on YouTube, and it's Data Protection Gumbo. Just search that in your YouTube box and check us out. If you like us, then join and share. But Pavel, thank you so much for being a guest on the show, and we really appreciate it.
Yeah, wish you all the best. Thank you for having me.